And again, the I think there's much more chance of getting people to understand in other forums, particularly because juries kind of have a stacked situation. The judge is very intimidating. People are conditioned to pay attention to what he has to say or she has to say. And, you know, there's also the sort of the implied threat of some kind of arrest or some kind of obloquy if a juror doesn't do what the judge says.
Well, anytime you're in court, you run the risk of being arrested. I mean, one of my goals when I go into court is to get out of there without being arrested. I can relay a couple incidents when I was facing a trial for no driver's license due to poverty, and that I'd go up and I'd an arraignment. I said, yes, I'd like my jury trial. And the first time, the DA came up with some reason to dismiss it. And the second time, it was before bombastic Bill Kelsey. And
bombastic Bill.
Oh, well, everybody knows he's full of himself, if not a bunch of other stink. And that I go up there. When I go into court or when I'm dealing with cops and so on, I go into what I call monk mode of being just very quiet and centered and just so and not, oh, yeah, sort of thing. And just try to maintain presence of mind to deal with whatever's going to be happening, because something will be. And I go up there and I just say very quietly, matter-of-factly, I'd like to have a jury trial. And he goes, oh, well, I can tell you're one of those people that like to fight the system. And I go, I'm asserting my rights under law. You appear to be prejudicial. Oh, well, you should just go ahead and disqualify me then. I already have. Oh, but I've never seen this guy before. And of course, I was a victim of a felony by him and used that to disqualify him previously. And he's all embarrassed there in front of the DA. And, you know, that was that. And so just the having the confidence to do your own jury trial, to at least enact a strategy of what I call bleed the beast, of forcing them to shoot their bullets into the air and not bodies, that you have a better chance of bargaining out of there. Now, the downside of it is, and I've seen this, that if you do your jury trial and get convicted, the judge is inclined to give you a stiffer sentence, so people should be warned about that. There's
even though theoretically they're not supposed to.
Well, they have judicial discretion. There are so many, many ways that the system can fuck with you. Up in San Mateo, they ask you to sign this form announcing that if you represent yourself, that they consider you're making a mistake. Well, I took that as indication that they were prejudicial, and that until they could find some judge who could try the matter without being prejudiced this way, you know, there's no way to proceed. So there are many ways to look for how to disqualify the judge, how to disqualify the district attorney, how to get a mistrial.
What I want to really get out is, rather than the details of how to do that, though that's important, and I hope that you
start learnable
putting out, yes, and I hope you put that out onto your website and indeed into paper form for those of us who don't have websites or don't realize that. And check this out, everybody, you can go to the library and make use of their computer to get on the internet if you want to. And if you don't know how to do it, all you have to do is go to the reference librarian and ask him or her how to do it. Now, you often have to sign up, like, I don't know, some hours in advance.
Usually a little late, but pretty accessible. Cabrillo Library, pretty accessible also.
If they don't arrest you, of course, for walking on campus, as they sometimes do with homeless people, harassment, or homeless-looking people, I should say. I know my good friend Ernie was getting a lot of hassle, although he was a user of Cabrillo Library, in essence an occasional student, and a fine chess player, I might add. He was nonetheless getting the bum's rush from the local security.
And the web is a good resource for all sorts of information on freedom fighting. I believe FIGA has their website, FIGA.org, United States Freedom Fighter, USFF.com, and I mentioned
that's that the Richard Quigley Freedom Site, for
because
those
it's linked to others as well. As people who've been on the web can find that you find part of what you want, and hopefully you can get connected.
And another value, of course, of using the library and the websites there is that the California Homeless Civil Rights Action Network, which is a sort of a largely moribund group, but it's not defunct, has a website where you can actually write about what the police are doing. You can sign it anonymously if you want, or with some sort of moniker, or you can give your name and say, come and get me, and spread that information around not just California, but around the entire nation, because people will have access to it. And you can respond to those who've had the courage to do that. And again, all you have to do, for those of you who are a little kind of, you know, anxious about computers and websites, is
it's easy.
You walk into the library and go up to the reference librarian and say, help, 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 and she or he will help you.
A few years ago, it wasn't quite as easy. Now it is. It's the barriers are down. It's
it is your,
if I can do it, you can do it.
It is your access, not just to finding out what other people are saying, but to have your own say. That is really important, I think, that you have your own say. Did Officer Seeley jack you up near the railroad tracks in a case that made you go through court on two or three separate occasions when you were charged with a misdemeanor because you had a brown paper bag with you with a beer in it that you hadn't opened, and Officer Seeley was frustrated that he couldn't charge you with an open container law, so instead he charged you with trespassing near the railroad tracks? And did the judges then say, this case is dismissed because it's bullshit, and because the witnesses didn't show, as happened to one homeless man recently? Well, then you can put that on the library's website, and you can, actually the civil rights website, and you can let the country know about it, and Officer Seeley and his behavior then becomes publicly accountable. Now, when our Citizens Police Review Board holds an investigation, ha ha ha, that is to say, they peek over the shoulders of the police department and they say yes or no, mostly yes to the whatever the police department says, we don't even get to see those reports. But you can write your own report, and you can put it in the library on the computer for everyone in the country to read.
Quigley's been promising to do a good cop, bad cop website where we could have a dossier on different police behaviors, because, you know, we found that bad cops tend to do bad cop things consistently, that there is a pattern. And
we know that the cops, unfortunately, and particularly in Santa Cruz, don't usually get disciplined, although we have heard that the sheriff's got a few suspensions. I guess one guy is supposed to be getting fired.
That's a farce.
For fireworks activity. I mean,
you know, I'd like to think that the cops would get together and have a beer after a big day's work, and lighting off firecrackers on the 4th of July is extremely patriotic.
I have no problem with deputies lighting off fireworks.
Yeah.
But the kind of fireworks that bother me are the kinds of violence that happens repeatedly, or the threat of violence, the intimidation of the threat of violence that has become a part of this city and county around victimless crimes. That is just completely wrong.
Well, the Sheriff's Department is involved in widespread gratuitous assault, and what I mean is that they'll be investigating a crime, and if somebody is not properly subservient or to their mind cooperative, they'll just bam them. They'll just body butt them. They'll just, you know, throw them on the ground. They'll just throw them in the car. And, you know, I've seen this enough to believe this is a corrupt culture of whatever we can get away with, which is what bullies and thugs do. And, you know, I feel bad for the good people in the system, and because they are tainted and corrupted by it. And we've been talking about the fact that there's no remedy or recourse in the courts for that, anywhere.
And actually what we kind of are hinting at here today, and hopefully there'll be some more specific shows on this, I know there's a whole program coming up next weekend called Common Action, and I believe there's actually a meeting at noon today for Common Action, which is a series of forums that are, I'm not sure if they're free or they cost money.
A few bucks, sliding scale.
Sliding scale and a few bucks.
I think I saw something nobody turned away for lack of funds. But
right, this is a three-day thingy that is happening next weekend at the Veterans Hall, and again, the final kind of bells and whistles are being added, even as we speak, at the Rise Zone. I think that's what it's pronounced, the Rise Zone, which is the info shop, the new kind of meeting place for different organizations at 224 Walnut Street. And that is, let me see if I have that right. I'm looking over my...
It's starting
at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Actually, at 11 o'clock is the Santa Cruz 5 meeting. And those, of course, are the defendants, including Steve Argue, who's been convicted, who face continued trials for the events of May 22nd, where there was a rowdy, but rowdy isn't right in the word, certainly spirited, vigorous, loud protest outside the McPherson Center. And people are facing charges for that in a really, I think, police-created situation, where people were not complaining about the noise, generally. There was only one complaint, and the woman who later complained said the police arrested the wrong woman anyway, but the police instead created a scene, and everyone, unfortunately, in that situation kind of played into it, though it's hard to say what else they could have done under those circumstances. Anyway, they started meeting at 11 o'clock today at the info shop, and they will presumably still be meeting there, if you're interested. That's at 224 Walnut Street. And then at 1:30, there is a kind of a conference on Common Action, And for more details, you can to get the address of that, call the info shop at 423-8223, 423-8223. At 6 p.m. tomorrow at the info shop, there is a Mumia meeting, for those of you who are interested in the fate of Mumia Abu-Jamal, an Amnesty International prisoner of conscience who is facing a death warrant. A death warrant hasn't been signed recently, but it's about to be. Or
sitting on death row for several years now.
Right. And then at 4:30 on Tuesday, that's 2 days away, at the info shop, again, 224 Walnut, is another meeting of the Santa Cruz Five. These folks are really trying to get information about their case out. And while I kind of regret that we're having to dump all our energy into the Santa Cruz Five trials, I wish we could be doing other things, I still think that this is really an important series of cases, that we have to defend people who are unjustly accused, and we have to somehow find a way to use these cases to expose the underlying failure of the police department to find more peaceful, more sensible, less expensive, less violent ways of
more legal and moral
as well. There, of course, you could talk about really basic institutional reform, as former Citizens Police Review Board member and Free Radio Santa Cruz commentator John Malkin has done. His show, I guess, is on Saturday nights around midnight. Maybe is it 10 to midnight or midnight to 2? Anyway, he's got a late night show on Saturday. He's been concerned about some really alternate ways of organizing law enforcement in our community so that there is a different approach taken, a fundamentally different approach. And I think it's a great idea.
And many police are open to new methods. They realize that their job is to treat these problems and that force and violence aren't necessarily effective in many, many cases. The whole idea of community policing, of being open to having their role defined by the public, if only the public were informed and involved. There's so much to be done here as to what is the role of police in a free society? What is a positive outcome? The ideas of restorative justice and prevention. I've found many police who seem very gratified to be getting away from the bad guy approach and out there actually helping people.
I also want to say at this point, and you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3, all you dial spinners who don't quite know what this show is, I'm talking to Joel Kappa. He's my guest. This is Robert Norse, and this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, our twice-weekly Civil Rights for the Poor show. We're going to be coming at you till about 1:30. We're hoping to get a report from activist and writer Lucy Kinmetzer, whose story, if you have access to today's Sunday Sentinel, you can read on the opinion page. Her son was beaten by a number of young punks, sort of skinhead types, white youths, near the Laurel Park, Loudon Nelson Center. I guess it was on Tuesday night. And in that same period of time, there were two other activists beaten near the liquor store. There was two homeless people had rocks thrown at them the evening before. There was another person who was assaulted that evening in a case that was mentioned at Dominican Hospital. I don't have his or her name. And none of this has really appeared in the Sentinel that I'm aware of. We've heard cases about something that happened on Chestnut Street last week, but these most recent, this rash of cases is not made the Sentinel. What has made the Sentinel is Lucy Kinmetzer's very well written story, which talks about this hate crime, because almost all the people that have been attacked have looked homeless, and there is a general sense. Well, it's not clear. That's not as clear as it was, let's say, in assaults on sleeping homeless people, that this was done primarily as it was as some 20-odd assaults through July that I've kind of followed happened for the purpose of harassing, beating, terrorizing. That's what it really is, like the Klan terrorizing blacks after the Civil War, terrorizing homeless people in Santa Cruz to get them out of here. And then also the sort of sick business of doing it for sport. We're hoping Lucy will call in and kind of talk to us about that. Hoping to get a report from Laura Tucker, who's on the Homeless Issues Task Force and who may be listening to our show, maybe coming in. She's the kind of the note taker and the minute taker at that session. And maybe even a report from hate crime expert David Silva, who's apparently had a good day getting signatures for his hate-free zone initiative, which doesn't involve increasing penalties for hate crimes, but simply involves making people more aware of the Santa Cruz community's commitment to make this a hate-free area. And we're talking about really hate as far as hate crimes go. I think it's perfectly appropriate to hate injustice. I think there's nothing wrong with hating broccoli. And I've got no problem with hating politicians who lie to you and abuse people's rights, at least insofar as their political behavior goes. You got to hate that kind of behavior. But hating groups of people because they are associated with a certain class of people and acting out that kind of behavior is a no-no, folks. And you don't have to be politically correct, or you don't have to be a member of a progressive clique. You just have to be a sensible person who realizes you don't judge a person by the color of their skin, by the shape of their sexual organs, by their age, by the whether they have a disability or not. That's just wrong. And it's not that it's, you know, correct to say so. It's that it's wrong to engage in those kinds of behaviors. And if the community is tolerating, or to some extent even facilitating, this kind of violence, particularly against homeless people, which aren't recognized as a protected class at the moment, by the way, as Mayor Byers, our mayor, has been doing by saying essentially of homeless people, there's just no place for them here. And what she means by that is not we should get rid of them all, but that's the lesson that some people draw, because she's unwilling to stand up for the right of homeless people to do such an elementary thing as to sleep at night without being arrested, fined, or ticketed, or beaten. Because if you haven't got an opportunity to call the police because your behavior is criminal, defined as criminal by the mayor, how can you avoid getting beaten?
And the homeless problem is just getting worse as rents go up and up and up. I heard the figure recently that there are 500,000 new millionaires between San Francisco and San Jose. That's kind of boggling, all those yuppies getting stock options. But the gap between the middle class and the poor has become humongous, and that there is, in fact, there are people leaving Santa Cruz on a daily basis squeezed out by money. People who are working, you know, 50-60% of the time to pay their rent somehow until they can't anymore. And there's no solution to this in sight. You know, I advocate camping, living bush style, living lightly and simply.
Camping, I'm afraid, is a no-no, but if the Homeless Issues Task Force ever gets its shit together, they did originally, I guess it was, 3 weeks ago now, they put forward a resolution that the camping ban is wrong and has to be essentially overturned, particularly given the fact that there is no shelter for 95% of people outdoors in Santa Cruz. No question about that. At the moment, however, of course, they sent that resolution back to committee to do some more work on it. Thank you very much.
You know, you're mentioning the homeless issue and how people are treated. And we're talking about the more infraction things. And, of course, you can't get a jury trial on an infraction. I've seen it many times where people be charged with a misdemeanor. And if you want a jury trial that will reduce it to an infraction, they'll still screw with you. But they'll do that in order to deny you a jury trial. And that there are so many ways that people can be fucked with on the front end, and just being rousted and arrested and harassed and jailed and, you know, poked and probed and cuffed. And then they drop the charges. So, you know, we need to talk about ways to do prevention of state violence at all levels.
I agree. And I think that I'm going to do a little therapy here for our audience. This is really the song that may become the new theme song of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. My producer is interjected only on Thursdays. I'm not sure why that would be, but we'll get into that. Stay with us. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. And if you were kind of getting a little tired, if you're tired of hearing bureaucrats pontificate, judges sit there making everybody feel uncomfortable for even breathing in the courtroom, and city council member run rings around the law and essentially do nothing about basic human rights and needs, this song may appeal to you.
Shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker. You're a cocksucking, ass-licking Uncle Fucker. You're an Uncle Fucker, yes it's true. Nobody fucks uncles quite like you.
Shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker. You're the one that fucked your uncle, Uncle Fucker. You don't eat or sleep or mow the lawn. You just fuck your uncle all day long.
What's going on here?
That, of course, was from South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. So if you want that to be the new theme song of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, please call in immediately and tally your vote. And, oh, well, my goodness.
Are you going to hear from a listener?
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Lucy Kemnitzer. I'm calling in from out of range, so I don't know what you've been talking about right now.
Oh, well, we're glad you called in, because even though you're out of range, you put yourself in range.
Oh, good.
And we have mentioned earlier that, Lucy, you are a writer. You're on the Homeless Issues Task Force. You're a shrewd observer. I'm not sure how shrewd. Are you shrewd?
I think I'm shrewd. Kind of.
Yeah, a fairly shrewd observer of Santa Cruz political comings and goings. And you have recently suffered a very serious assault on your family, and we've talked a little bit about that, and you've talked about it even more eloquently in today's Sunday Sentinel. I don't know, I haven't read the article aloud on the air, and perhaps we should have done that before we started. You want to talk a little bit about what happened and start there?
What happened is that my son was walking downtown on his way home from Cafe Pergolesi on Tuesday night around 10:30 at night, and he was jumped by five very young men with close-shaven heads and who were otherwise unremarkable except for the fact that they leaped all over him and punched him about 20 times, kicked him, threw a rock at him, broke his glasses, his CD player, and threw his library book on the ground. The only explanation they gave was that he was a fucking victim, was their words.
Mm-hmm.
And the same night, several other people were assaulted around town. We don't know, although we kind of think it's very likely from the descriptions of the attacks that it was the same people. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. His nose was broken in a couple of places, but he's recovering now. The swelling's gone down, so he almost looks like himself today. And he has two big shiners. One's gone down, the other one's still pretty purple.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you felt sufficiently moved. Of course, you filed a complaint with the police department, and the Sentinel, of course, has been doing a front page coverage of the whole thing, right?
Not. The Sentinel has not mentioned his attack, and of course they can't mention the other attacks because they haven't been reported. We need to talk to those people who were assaulted that night and have them sort of explain their theory behind not reporting their attacks.
You know, I don't agree with that. I know that they weren't reported to the police department per se, but they were reported, I believe, Mae Wong, a Sentinel reporter, was present in a march by supporters of the Steve Argue and the Santa Cruz
Mae
Five.
Mae Wong is the person who wrote up the attack on Tuesday night that did get into the
Mae police. Wong was present at the Metro when two of the victims, Ben and Will, I think it was two of them, confronted one of the people that they identified as one of their attackers, a man named Sam. And
so there is an unofficial.
This was at the Metro, and Mae Wong was present, I believe. Although again, I'm not a witness, but I took this secondhand from a person who was present. So I think the Sentinel fully well knows what's going on. They're just not talking about it. It's just
Tom
it's
Honig
their
told
standard.
Me that his reporters would be looking into.
Oh yeah.
The other assaults that took place on Tuesday night, but I've been reading the paper every day, and they still have only reported the one attack that took place in Beach Flats, the one that used the knife.
Right, that was, of course.
And that attack, the assailants did mention racial motives, although the the victim was not identified as a person of color.
Well, this plays into how the homeless assaults, the assaults on homeless people for the last 8 or 9 months have been almost without exception sidelined. There have been a few little blurbs in the paper, and of course there was the case of Aaron Birch, who has been arrested for assaulting Joe Barker, but of course his companions, I think there were 4 or 5 of them, are still at liberty, and they were supposedly under police surveillance, according to Sergeants Clark, Baker, and Officer Seeley in public statements to the homeless community at the Homeless Services Center in May.
Well, at this point, because attacks on people for their perceived social class are not considered to be hate crimes, there's nobody keeping statistics in a systematic way, although I understand that there are people who are advocates for the homeless who have been keeping informal statistics. I don't know that those have been centralized in any way that's accessible. Mm-hmm. And it's easy, as long as the newspapers also continue to not report them, so that they're not in the morgues, they're not in the files of the newspapers, it's easy to say, oh, we don't have a problem with that, and not to allocate staff for that. I'm not sure. I know that the number of police in Santa Cruz has increased by quite a lot. I'm not sure what their priorities are. I'm going to be asking questions about what it is that all those police are doing.
Well, and also, interesting enough, I got a report from Chris Crone, a council member who has been making some lone statements about the need to take some sensible, establish some sensible limits on the, well, at least oversee what the police are doing in terms of expenditures. Mm-hmm. He hasn't taken the step that I think is necessary of suggesting that the police chief had best be replaced along with the city manager and the city attorney, as many people in the last election thought was going to happen after these three swept into office with a 64% vote. But then, aside from that, there is some interesting information that he sent me the other day, which I'm going to buggle through my bag here in search of and probably not find. What he was talking to me about in this literature was the cost overruns for the police department's new bells and whistles station, which you can all see sitting out there in magnificent unused splendor right across from a Loudoun Nelson Community Center.
I'm curious when that was supposed to open.
It was supposed to open, I think, back in June.
June?
Yeah, late June.
I had thought it was sometime in the late summer.
But then they moved it ahead. You know, uh-huh. I mean, we were actually, some of us, planning a protest at the police station, a sleep-in at the police station. And this was actually going to be done not just by the radical, wild-eyed types, but by some of the more conservative folks as well, suggesting that it's time for Mayor Byers and her little errand boy, Fitzmaurice, to get off the pot and start providing some shelter that they're talking about, or decriminalize people who make their own shelter in a town where it seems to become increasingly illegal to survive.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because I'm going to have to run up. It all happened already. I will call back.
Call back.
Maybe next week or else later today.
Please do.
All right.
Thank you.
I believe that that was Lucy Kimmitzer, who had to get back to her birthday party. It wasn't her birthday, but it was a birthday party of a friend, and that's some woman's 50th birthday party. So all you 50-year-old women out there, lift a glass. It's 50 and going strong for Lucy's friend. Actually, that's Lucy's friend, Jeannie, for those of you who know her. Happy birthday, Jeannie. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I have found it. It's an August 24th letter from, who is it from? It is from Santa Cruz Office of the City Manager. It talks about problems at the Santa Cruz Police Safety Facility. And this is what Dick Wilson writes. As you're both aware, pursuant to an inspection conducted by city-retained inspectors in June 1999, the city ascertained that, as installed, the windows of the Santa Cruz Police Safety Facility currently under construction were not watertight. This disturbing disclosure, I think David Silva predicted something about this about a year or two ago, but I could be wrong, prompted the city to conduct a more comprehensive investigation with respect to the facility's overall watertight integrity. Architectural Wall Services, a consulting firm with expertise in the exterior sealing of large commercial buildings, was retained by the city to conduct that investigation. And here is the summary. The facility's window assemblies were not constructed according to the manufacturer's recommendations and industry standards, rendering the building susceptible to leakage at these locations. The facility's windows and other building penetrations, including doorways and utility boxes, were not adequately flashed or sealed into the building's primary waterproof membrane, rendering the facility subject to further water intrusion. Many of the facility's window sills, there's a whole series of problems. The finished stucco coat is too soft to allow adequate adhesion of exterior sealants. It was constructed with an insufficient number of control and expansion joints. The elastomeric paint coating was not applied to the specified thickness. The facility's planter box, there's a whole series of concerns. And what they recommend is all window assemblies must be removed and reconstructed. All the facility's windows and impacted building penetrations must be retrofitted with the required fitting. I guess it's just the windows that seem to be the problem here. And what am I just picking on the poor police station? Well, this was a station that was originally going to be $8 million, ended up being $13 million. And it just kind of strikes me that had they spent a fraction of this amount of money on social services, we'd be seeing a lot better use, maybe a lot less need for police, new fancy police stations, you know? I mean, it's kind of ironic. We still have with us in the studio our guest, Joel Kappa. Joel, what do you think of all this?
Well, I thought local people were a little asleep at the helm here to, you know, be doing police review, cop watch, and then boom, they just slide through this massive new cop shop, and not saying they didn't need it, but where was the community input? You know, the things you mentioned are somewhat normal for any large construction project. What galls me is that the electrician wasn't paid for reasons of bureaucratic blundering, couldn't make his payroll, meet his cash flow needs, out of business, 20-some tradesmen losing their job because of city bureaucratic bungling. I think that's a real shame. Can't pin that on the cops necessarily, but you know, when the city will try to entice new businesses with tax grants of $10,000 or $20,000 per job they bring to town, you know, they just threw away significant public resource right there.
Well, with us on the line is Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. In the studio, Tim, is Joel Kappa. I don't know if you've ever met Joel. Joel, Tim. Tim, Joel.
No, I haven't. More. Not that I know of.
Joel's concerned about problems in the courts and so forth. I was just reading this letter, which you probably have seen, from the city manager Dick Wilson to Ernie Sosbo of Myers and Associates regarding the police station.
I think I've seen it, yeah.
What? I guess
I haven't memorized it.
No, it's not that.
I went to a meeting on the police. I went to a meeting on the police station, so I have some background on that.
What's the story? Wasn't this a project? Am I accurate in saying this was a project that was supposed to be $8 million, ballooned to $13 million, and is still going to claim who knows how many thousands, tens of thousands, or hundreds of thousands more?
Well, I think it's a project that, as far as I'm concerned, should come in. You know, perhaps ballooned what it was originally, but it's a project that should come in at basically the cost that it was, that we're requiring. It's the problem is that we have to work with the contractor and the architect to correct the flaws in it, and the flaws are notable. We're not going to take possession, I guess, until we can make sure we're going to get corrections of those flaws, and those will be hopefully paid for by the people who made the mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about Joel was making a comment a moment ago. I don't know, have you been listening to our show?
I have not. I'm about to leave, but I want to say hello.
I appreciate you doing that. And you are actually the only city council member that, when reached, is generally agrees to make a public statement, little as I agree with a lot of your public statements, mind you.
Well.
What about the public input process on the police station? I know that last city council meeting,
right,
you voted against oral communications. You kind of split with your two fellow candidates.
Was that because of the police station?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it certainly would have been one topic that a person could have brought up at the oral,
right,
communications era. Are you going to do you think you're going to be favoring increased oral communications, or is that
What's your sense on that? I was surprised you voted with majority against it.
I think we need to be clear on, you know, when we're going to be doing oral communications and when we're not. I don't think that was clearly written on the agenda, and certainly not clear, in fact, in our rules. It needs to be clarified. But in that case, there were 200 people there to talk about a couple of issues, and it did go until almost midnight, I think. It would have kept a lot of people there sort of cooling their heels to talk about what they consider to be fairly important issues. I saw no reason to keep them waiting necessarily. As far as I'm concerned, oral communications are required at public meetings and regular council sessions, and we ought to do them.
Well, don't you, I mean, you certainly, maybe I'm misremembering, but I believe in the campaign, you've made a lot of the importance, indeed in some of your votes at city council, on public process.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you suggested when one of the police issues that came up that there be more input, even though
I
you
did
voted.
A good job at the RTC, too, for public process. I want to tell you that.
RTC.
In case you missed that one.
RTC. Tell us what that is.
The Regional Transportation Commission, when it was making its decisions about projects in the community for the next 20 years, seemed to, in my view, to be doing everything it could to put public process on the back burner and out in the hinterlands.
But
you know,
yet,
in fact, I think we were having our public meeting at some camp, Camp Kennaway or something, and I got that moved. And
well, that's good.
You know, I've done a little bit for public process
well, I guess
here and there.
Well, the concern we had when we saw you voting with Byers, Rotkin, Hernandez, and Matthews to cut off any possible oral communication, was it this a fluke, or are you going to say that you're going to generally oppose oral communication at special meetings, which we expect there are going to be many?
Well, there are many, yeah. We have, like, five meetings a month.
Are you likely to join the Crone Sugar vote on that issue? It comes up again at another meeting, or what is your? Do you have any sense of that?
I don't have any sense of that. I don't know what I'm going to do necessarily with decisions about the oral communication process. I think we have a lot of oral communications. I think we certainly hear from people at
too
regular
much oral
meetings.
Communications, perhaps for your taste.
No. Come on, Robert.
Well, you voted against it last time. I mean, what am I going to say? You know?
Well, because there were 200 people standing there, and they had not expected this. I think that in some respects there was some confusion, though, and some people had expected there might be an opportunity to talk in oral communications, and I thought they were disappointed. That was unfortunate.
I mean, you may
have to be really clear about it.
You may remember that there was the mayor recessed the meeting, I guess, two meetings ago.
Yes, I remember that.
Because two members of the public were supposed to essentially believe that they had not spoken, you know, that they had spoken at the last meeting. In fact, they had spoken two meetings before, because the last two meetings had been, quote, special meetings. I mean, I guess what I'm looking for is some agreement that there's going to be as much oral communication or expanded public process as possible in this situation. And that was my understanding when people voted back in November. I think they were voting for that. I mean, do you have a different understanding of that? Or
public process?
Yeah, public.
I think people were certainly voting for that.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, you know, I thought there were 200 people there. We listened to four hours of testimony at that meeting that you're talking about. I thought there were a lot of people there that wanted to be involved in the public process,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to make sure they were heard and they weren't necessarily bumped till later and later in the evening. And it seems, that doesn't seem unreasonable.
Well,
all we did was listen to the public that night, Robert. You know that.
I know that. But
I mean, in a sense, you're being disingenuous when you say that somehow we silence the public. I think, in fact, I think the public, if you were to put a stopwatch on it, they certainly, people's comments, any individual's comments almost probably went longer than my comments.
I noted at certain flashpoints where, for example, Mayor Byers could have easily accommodated two speakers. Instead, she chose to close everything down, shut off the TV, shut off the mics, recess the area.
There was some abusiveness in that particular moment, don't you think?
Well, in the sense of the content of what was said, or what are you referring to? The fact that these two people—I mean, she was technically correct.
I thought she handled it rather well.
I mean,
and
she was technically
people
correct.
People weren't. I don't believe people were arrested, and and I don't think they were necessarily...
They were criminalized in that situation. They were refused permission to return to the council meeting. They were made to look like, you know, criminals on television. I mean, until you guys turned down the television. They received a smearing in the media as a consequence.
Those smearing in the media, but in any case, the...
Did you read Lee Kornstrom's column?
No, I don't read
He's such
Lee.
A sweetie.
I don't read him. I haven't read one of his columns in a year, so... I should, though. You can send them all to me if you think he's an important person.
Oh, he's a wonderful guy. But what I'm saying is that the buyers could, since she eventually allowed everyone to speak anyway, it would have been a very simple matter to say, does anyone in line object to these two speaking? If there had been an objection, I believe they would have gone to the back of the line. That's how they are.
Well, people are, you know, that's not the way that
instead it was rigid
rules. You don't necessarily have to
rigid
ask
rules.
People to reject, and to put people in the position of having to actually... you know, voice their rejection of two people that, you know, or
instead
three people that want to speak, who the content of who's, that's not their role.
Tim, instead, will you please choose
whether or not this gentleman or that lady ought to speak.
Right, Tim, instead of 6 minutes of oral communications, you had 15 minutes of disruption.
Wow.
You had six police officers in the back of the room making sure that two people did not return to the chambers. I think it was overkill.
Yeah, I honestly think it was handled well.
That alarms me.
I don't think it's a question of measuring 6 minutes against 15 minutes. Although 15 is certainly fine. No one was hurt. The situation was resolved fairly well. I didn't think it was badly done, and I think the people in the room were able to make their comments respectfully and were listened to with respect.
Yeah, I think that if that was her intention at the beginning, she could have easily done it in another way. You know?
Perhaps. I don't know.
But I appreciate your talking to me. One last thing about the police department. I mean, I guess there's been a kind of a quiet review of the city attorney. Is any such review of the police chief's scheduled?
Well, we don't necessarily review the police chief.
That's the city manager's job?
Yes, his job. But in our relationship with the city manager, we... talk to him about department heads and certainly the police chief's included in that.
You've heard the city attorney's contention, I'm sure, that the entire independent police review report on the May 22nd incident will be kept confidential. Does this give you a concern?
Would you ask the question again? I just got a little bit.
Sure, I'll give it again. The Diane Christensen is the independent investigator appointed by the Citizens Police Review Board, hired by the city for some, I don't know how many thousands of dollars to look over the May 22nd events and talk about misconduct there. This will be the first such investigation in Santa Cruz CPRB and City Council history that I'm aware of. However, it's just been revealed that John Barisoni now feels it is his legal opinion that the entire report must be kept completely secret. What is the point of an independent investigation if you have a completely secret report? And what is the city? Are you interested in the city council in finding some way to make sure that there really is a public process here, not just one person kind of giving a secret report to the CPRB and the police station that nobody can ever see?
Yeah. Are we talking about the personnel aspects of the report or something?
They're claiming that the personnel aspects will mean all aspects of the report have to be made classified from birth.
Yeah, no, I don't think that, I don't know, I haven't looked specifically at what implications the personnel aspects of that report might have. That's always a difficult thing for us in all matters that relate to people who work in the city. I believe that personnel in the city have rights and they ought to be protected. I'm a union grievance officer, I'm constantly interested in protecting the confidentiality of people who work and what they want released, how they want it released, and that process. It never makes the process very easy when you want to review something like this.
Have unusual protections in this situation? I mean, they have an unusually powerful lobby statewide that gives them the power, for example, of absolute immunity, even to perjury on the witness stand. I mean, it's quite an incredible power the police department has. In fact, that's the reason for the establishing a Citizens Police Review Board and going beyond that to establish an independent investigator in the first place, right?
Right. And it's particularly hard to sort out with police officers. Right, I agree with you. They have a really difficult job, as you're well aware, and they have a lot of protections which, make it difficult to make a public process out of.
Well, I think some of the citizens also feel they have a really difficult job when police officers are regularly behaving in a fashion which there really is no independent oversight to check them. And that's of course, the concern. You may recall that there have been 8 shootings by San Jose police, 7 of them fatal since the beginning of the year.
Right.
And, of course, you have no process there of any sort except, I guess...
I think they're working on a citizens review process there. I don't know how it's going.
Right. Well, we've told them how this one is going here. I guess.
Are you being pessimistic about it?
Well, I mean, what do you think there, Tim?
I would suspect you might be.
Well, if the city council, and you are certainly a key vote on the city council, were really supportive of a citizens police review board process that assured officers appeared when they were subpoenaed and established real public hearings and made sure that these reports were made public insofar as at least the testimony goes of people who are speaking in public on the issue. I'm not talking about the officer's private life. I'm not talking about the officer's secret habits. I'm talking about issues that concern the public, how they behave in public places, for God's sake. You know, I mean.
Well, I am interested in a good citizen review process for... you know, all public workers, all public projects, and including the police. I'm also interested in doing it the right way, making sure that it works. You know, the idea that you would, in a sense, argue for, let's say, pushing the process in some particular direction to the point where it becomes totally dysfunctional doesn't interest me. I want it to be functional.
Now, wait a minute. Are you suggesting that a public process is dysfunctional?
No.
I'm not quite sure. How am I suggesting a dysfunctional process?
I just want to be really careful about how it goes forward.
I think we have a dysfunctional process right now.
I know you do.
And you don't agree? You think we have a functional process?
No. Let's say I'm working... I work all the time on trying to make that process better. I don't think it's functioning the way it should right now. But
that's encouraging. I mean, I'm glad to hear you say that. The question then is what can be done. And I guess the reason the independent investigator was appointed was to establish at least in this one...